Hello and welcome to GHL Extra. I am Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you're beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon. And we kidnapped DJ, we clubbed him over the head, we rolled his body up in a carpet, and we dragged him back to the podcast studio to continue talking about how amazing he is.
Wait.
I'm very strong, carrying him here by myself.
Do we know that this is DJ? Or is this the DJ variant?
Oh, no. Well, whichever variant of DJ this is, he's got Stockholm Syndrome because he's happy to be here.
Well played.
That's good. Were you sitting on that?
I was just trying to figure out how to segue out of being kidnapped.
Yes, and. DJ's like, well, you never know when it might happen. Got to be ready. Okay.
Gotta be ready.
I graduated UCB and I'm a terrible improviser.
Listen, you know, you got to be open to whatever life throws your way. You get kidnapped, you got to enjoy it.
So as we mentioned in the main episode, I've been quite busy.
Yes.
Ashley's been quite busy.
Yes.
But DJ, this man cannot get enough.
I'm not busy at all.
Culture. No, he's super busy. Super busy with his amazing comic book, Hellbent comic book. Hellbentcomic.com or
Hellbentcomicbook.com. Yeah, if you do Hellbentcomicbook.com, go check. I don't know where it's going to go. Make sure that book's in there.
That's right. Hellbentcomicbook.com. Go support his campaign because he's a fellow Kickstarter indie creator making awesome books out there. And so he's like, somehow he finds this time. I don't know where it is. That's why I think he might be a time traveler, because DJ is always up to date on all the great pop culture stuff. I'm going to put you on the bent right here, DJ. Okay. What was the last movie screening you went to for your podcast?
Screening was, I don't know that I've been to a screening since last year. I think that would have probably been Avatar: The Way of Water.
Okay.
As of this recording, I'm going to be going to Ant-Man soon. I missed the screening for Megan, which is a bummer because because I spent money on it and I wish I hadn't.
Oh, all right.
But you know,
okay, now I know.
Listen, it's the way it goes.
Okay. But sometimes it happens. You never know. It's, you know, are you excited for, I'm currently to stay up with DJ's pop culture takes. I am, scrolling through Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah.
And I just remembered that, oh boy, there is a third Magic Mike's Last Dance. Are you going to that one, DJ?
I might check it out. I've heard mixed things, which is a bummer. I actually really like Soderbergh as a director. I don't know that I've seen the second one. I really like the first one. And I think Soderbergh's last movie was Kimmy. He's so prolific. It's hard to keep up. Mm-hmm. But I've been hearing it's not that great, but I don't know why. I think it's on HBO Max. So I'm probably going to check it out next time Monica and I have a date night, although I've heard good things about the second one. So maybe I'll go back and watch that.
Monica, the lovely Mrs. Only Stupid Answers.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Was in her vows. Yeah.
Say that again. It's hard, DJ.
Mrs. Only Stupid Answers was in her vows. That's her legal last name now.
All right. DJ, is there anything I'm cruising through all the streaming places. I'm looking for some TV. Maybe I'm looking on Hulu. Maybe it's broadcast. What should I be watching right now? Like, what am I missing out on? What TV shows do I need to check out?
Everybody's checking out The Last of Us, obviously, and I highly recommend that. But something that people might not be checking out, it's on Peacock. It's a show called Paul T. Goldman. Have you either of you heard of this?
No.
Okay. So it's so hard to describe. It is basically, it is like a true crime show, but it is also kind of like the HBO show The Rehearsal, where it uses the medium of like true crime to start poking at what is reality. Essentially what happened is there's a man who goes by Paul T. Goldman, who, according to him, found out that his second wife was secretly running a prostitution ring. He self-published a book about it, followed by a series of other self-published books. And he reached out to a director. I can't remember the name of the director's off the top of my head.
It says Jason Wollner.
Wollner. Yeah. He directed the second Borat movie. And they've been working on this show for over 10 years. I think it started in 2012. But the interesting thing is, so there's reenactments like there are in all true crime shows, except Paul T. Goldman plays himself in the reenactments.
It says Paul Finkelman. I'm looking at the plays Paul T. Goldman, both in the reenactments and the pseudonym he uses in Offer, but that doesn't seem like it's actually the Paul T. Goldman. Or is it?
It is. Because he didn't like his last name when he published the book, he changed it to Goldman. And then because Paul T. Goldman is a character in his book series, he came up with a fictional author character that is also.
This is like a real life coming into fiction.
Yes,
I see. W. Earl Brown from Deadwood is in this.
A lot of very talented actors that act along Paul T. Goldman, who is not a professional actor, in them, and it's just this interesting bleed of how it becomes a story about how do we define our reality? What happens when people kind of escape into a fiction? Because light spoilers, Paul's. The story Paul has come up with around his life isn't exactly 100% accurate. And the show kind of like pokes at the edges of that, but it's definitely like, if you're not into maybe like cringe TV, there's definitely some cringy moments. So be warned of that, but it's a really interesting, compelling show that I haven't quite seen anything else like it.
Interesting. Wow. That's a really good pick. That's great. I've not heard of the show.
Yeah.
There's too much.
Yeah, that's the kind of the thing I was talking about with my co-host Roxy is like, we were both watching Poker Face, enjoying that. And Bel Air is coming back, and all of these are shows. Paul T. Goldman, I highly recommend. The other shows I'm enjoying, but the problem is like, everybody's got like, even like for me, the one app I use the least now is probably Netflix, but even then my wife and I are watching Lockwood and Co. from Joe Cornish, who made Attack the Block, which is one of my favorite movies ever.
You season four just dropped.
I'm not into the universe,
universe.
Yeah, but there's so many like great, every app has a killer app, for lack of a better term.
It's as a killer series.
Yeah, as a killer series that people should be or could benefit from. And so there's just a lot of it's tough to sort through. It's tough to like I've said a lot. I think like something like Paul T. Goldman should have blown up like a Tiger King did. But how do you get the word out about it?
There's too much. There is too many things. Like I there's a series that I have heard about, and I'm curious if you have seen it yet. I've been wanting to watch Kaleidoscope on Netflix.
Ooh, yeah. I watched the first episode. It wasn't for me.
Did you watch the actual first episode? Or because I've heard that you can pick any episode you can watch in any order you like.
I think I inadvertently watched the actual first episode. I didn't. Mm-hmm. I thought I was under the impression that it randomizes it for you. I don't think that is actually the case. Mm-hmm. I watched the first episode, and it is I would say the writing in it. Is this on the Patreon?
Yes.
Okay. The writing on it is not good. It is very not good. Very by the numbers. Very like it's like the stuff, like the dialogue is the stuff that you put in there and say to yourself, like, I'm going to go back and punch this up later. And then they didn't.
Yeah.
To the point, I think actually, wow, this is the first time I get to talk about Kaleidoscope. We established, okay, so the episode I watched is we're bringing the team together, and we establish our getaway driver guy is always like, he's got like drumsticks. So even though he's doing mechanic stuff, he's always like drumming on stuff. Right. And then we have a heist, and as part of the heist, somebody is in hiding. It's in New York. So it's a street performer doing drum stuff, and it's not the drumming guy. It's a completely different character. It's a different member of the team. And it's like, well, then why did we bother introducing that this is this character's thing if that's not how we're going to – why would you – it's just a confusing choice. And it just it speaks to like – to me, it speaks to a lack of like paying attention. Like you kind of just like shot this out there, and then we figured it out as we went. Anyway, so mileage may vary. It wasn't – the first episode – it was one of those – like you mentioned, we're all busy. So I watched the first episode. I'm like, I think I'm good. I don't think I need to check out the rest of this.
Interesting. Yeah. So let me ask you this. I know The Flash has come back.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Final season of The Flash. Are you still watching that show?
No. Well, okay. So tricky.
Us neither.
Tricky question. So I have not followed The Flash since Crisis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
We like finished out Arrow because we were already that deep into Arrow.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it. And then like, oh, Legends. Oh, Black Lightning has one more season. We finished Black Lightning because it's perfect.
Yeah, basically we stopped. Yeah, Crisis kind of ended us watching any of those shows, basically.
Yeah, similar for me. Like you guys, I finished Arrow, and I still think I would argue that might be the most consistent of all of them. Mm-hmm. I liked Legends a lot. I stopped watching for whatever. What was that one character? They really started focus on this, like, glasses dude, like Bill or whatever. They started focusing on characters that annoyed me, and I was like, all right, I think I'm done with this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Flash, it was a 1-2 punch. One, Crisis felt like a good capper. And two, the realization that the plot line leading into Crisis for Flash was literally the same as Arrow. Like, it was the same. Hey, Barry's might die. What are we going to do about that? I was like, I think I'm good. That said, as you mentioned, I do a show that is keeping up with all of the things. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of our people in our circle, I kind of was more on camera talking about the Flash when it first came out. So I was like, okay, full circle, Flash's final season. I told Roxy, we're going to cover it for the show. And we both watched the first episode of the season. And we're like, okay, we're going to see how this goes, because it was rough. It was
one
of
the new season. It was rough.
Of the new season. And it was one of those like, wait, was this show never good? Was this show always... Because the way I want to see if you guys remember it differently. I remember season one of The Flash being pretty solid. And then season two, not that great. And then season three was like, uh-oh, maybe you only had one good season in you. And then it just kind of kept getting worse.
I agree. Like, I agree with you. I think to me, it was like season one is, you know, like the second half is almost like near perfect.
Yeah.
Season two, I thought was good until the reveal that Jay Garrick was actually the bad guy. And that's where I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And then season three was emo Barry a Savitar. And you were just like, this is bad. This is really. And then I thought season four was like a good way to go back with a thinker. But that, but then I thought that season kind of fell apart. And then I kind of just dropped out. Yeah. And then we both stopped watching was the first episode of that Crisis season. Because, yeah, they were doing the thing of like, oh, well, Barry's going to die in Crisis. I'm like, yeah, but Oliver is also going to die. What? Yeah.
And yeah, only also, one like, of these characters has a show keep going. Yeah. A show
if I could have picked between the two, I would have rather killed Barry. He's a way worse character.
Agreed.
I mean, if my like hottest take is that Flash was never all that great.
Yeah.
Definitely, I was not as huge a fan of the Flash as the rest of the world. But I feel like, unfortunately, with a lot of those CW shows, like after season three, they just all kind of shift in this imperceptible way. And they never quite give me the joy that those original seasons do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, Arrow never gets better than season two.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, no, I think Arrow season two is the best season. I would argue, I think five is pretty good. And I actually think the tricky thing is I'm kind of baffled that the Flash appears to not be doing what Arrow did for its final season. Arrow for its final season kind of did a victory lap. Like, hey, here's all the things we did leading up to this moment. Good job, us. We're out. I feel like Flash being technically the last Arrowverse show, because Superman and Lois inexplicably is in a different continuity.
Mm-hmm.
It should be like a big, like I saw an interview with the showrunner, and he's like, well, because I guess Legends got canceled on a cliffhanger. And it's like, well, we wanted to do like a 2-episode kind of like finale for Legends in Flash, like a 2-parter in Flash that kind of summed up that story and said goodbye to those characters. But then we found out we only had 13 episodes and we just couldn't do it. And based off what I saw in the first episode of the season, I don't know what plot lines you felt absolutely you needed to wrap up, but I think you would have been better served, like literally like each episode's a different, like this season. Episode. Yeah. This episode is Barry and Kara one last time. This episode is Barry and the Legends of Tomorrow one last time. Like literally just go through all
the greatest hits.
Yeah, Black Lightning's back for an episode, and that because they're
that
doing
also would have been a very expensive season, just FYI. But yes, yeah, I mean, yeah, your
you're not wrong. You're not wrong. It's just whatever, and that might be more the reason than whatever he said. You know, they say things, but it's just whatever. Like, I guess Caitlin and Killer Frost are fused now, and what that means is poor Danielle Panabaker has these shitty blue strands in her hair. And it's just weird. It's just a lot of weird, like Captain Boomerang is back. I don't know if in the new post-crisis, if this is supposed to be a completely different character than the Boomerang we met earlier in the show or what, but the actor is just, he's not Australian. He's just some white dude. He's just some dude that has like the classic Captain Boomerang jacket and a white t-shirt underneath. And it's like, all right, well, I guess we're not even fucking trying. So I don't know. Sorry. This is Patreon. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It's fine. I kind of think that, you know, we're not even fucking trying might be the way that people, a lot of people would describe The Flash for several seasons now.
Yeah. It's it is like, because of what it represents to our lives and our careers and all that stuff, or at least me, it's a bummer. Like it's a bummer that it's like, I was kind of excited to revisit it.
It is a bummer because I think, and Ashley and I had talked about this when we used to do all the reviews on YouTube and stuff like that. The reason why I think Arrow and Legends like quickly popped and Black Lightning popped to be our favorites is because they had a distinct tone. Mm-hmm. They knew like exactly what show they were. They stuck to their tone and they did it. And I feel in the four seasons of The Flash that I watched, four and a half, even part of five, I don't think The Flash ever found its tone ever in 5 years. And it's gone nine seasons. And I think, and I hear that from people that are still watching the show, like are still in with it. Like most people are like, yeah, you never know what you're going to get. Like it's a coin toss, whether you're going to get a good episode or just like something that's just absolutely like just wretched and not enjoyable to watch. And it's so, I just feel like The Flash, and no pun intended here, was constantly chasing other shows, like running after other shows, when instead, like we all, I think you and I and we all were like, yeah, end of season one, beginning of season two, that was it. You found it.
Yeah.
That was the show.
Yeah.
And then you like completely ignored it.
And it's when I think they didn't know, I think maybe they also fell into the trap of not knowing how to handle Barry's abilities. Like watching this, it was a very sense of like, oh, you guys never figured out.
That's why it was always the speed of light.
That's why every season was what it was like. Speedster, Thinker. Now just Thawn every time.
Thinker was so refreshing when we got him, and that I can't think of that actor's name, but he was so wonderful in that part. And then he became the B villain because we had Pizza Face Savitar the rest of the time.
The lesson they took from that season was no more non-speedster villains.
Which is such a weird, and they never figured out like the limits.
It's the Superman problem. It's like, well, how many things can you have a run against? Well, you have to be smarter than that.
You have
to be more subtle in your writing. And like
Superman and Lois ran into that problem because season one was
sort of Smallville over and over again.
Well, season one was he fought literally an army of Kryptonians.
Yeah.
And then in season two, they were like, what do we do? This lady that runs a cult that can possess other people and give them Superman powers.
I know. And then Titans was like, we'll take that. Thank you so much.
And it was completely unsatisfying.
Yeah.
That's such a weird pitfall that you think should be super voyeurable. Like, what if the villain had the hero's abilities? You know what, man? Don't start with that. Build to that. Get there. Like, don't jump to that one, like, right off the bat. Like, you have to, and also, like, I think it's super important. I wish we were doing, especially with as much genre material as we had now, I wish we did a better job of understanding, like, if I'm working on a Flash movie or even a Flash comic or whatever, I think my first test is, okay, what are the limits of his ability? Like, I'd have to explain to myself, I'd have to fundamentally understand within this universe, it's a heightened universe, how do his powers work? What are his limits? If you're somebody like Captain Cold, how do you get around that? Like, even as simple as like I'd love a scene where like a Captain Cold would be like, oh yeah, I know, I've run the numbers. I know Flash runs faster than speed of light, except that when he's moving that fast, he's intangible. So if he's going to hit me, he has to slow down to a point that he is still faster than I am, but he is still moving. He has to move that slow to be tangible. So even though he's faster than a normal person, he's not going to hit somebody as fast as at the speed of light. He literally is incapable of that when he's at that speed. Something like that. Like, come up with, you're making it up. It's your, the world is your oyster. Come up with the, and it's similar with Superman. How much, like if I were writing Superman, I'd probably set the rule for myself as like, he cannot fly faster than an SR-71 Blackbird. So if I need to know, Superman needs to get from Metropolis to the Middle East, how long would it take a SR-71 Blackbird to get there? That's how fast, that's how long Superman takes to get there. That's the rule. You know,
it's so and funny then, because I think I would make him a bit faster with that. But now that you've put down the SR-71 Blackbird, I am going to do this test, DJ. We are going to find out how fast is DJ's 2,200 miles per hour.
That's too fucking fast.
So he could fly from New York to about Denver in an hour.
Yeah. I think,
how long till he got to, like, I don't know.
So he could get to the other side of the world in like maybe 6 or 7 hours.
Time it takes us to get to New York from here.
And we've seen him on the show like be able to get to the other side of the planet
in like a blip
in
yeah.
seconds.
It's like Superman the movie turning the planet
yeah.
back.
Yeah. And I just think, and maybe it's not, maybe it doesn't need to be that, maybe he can be a little bit faster than, but the point is like one, I think a very smart decision in Superman the animated series is he can't breathe in space.
They I agree said, with that.
He has to get in a suit to get up in the space. That's a rule. And that's we're gonna live by that rule, because then those limitations actually allow you a foundation and to build off of. They can't just do anything
it's funny.
All the time.
It's interesting because I was gonna think even in Superman the movie, he's faster than that because he is in Metropolis, which is somewhere on the East Coast, and he flies to California in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like he doesn't get there immediately. Like you see him struggle, but like it seems like it's like 5 to 10 minutes, like movie time.
All right, boys, I'm gonna ask a question. Everyone at home is screaming into your phone. Who do you think is faster, Superman or the Flash?
Flash. Yeah. It's
no contest.
It not only it kind of has to be, because that's all the Flash has.
Bingo.
He has to be. Otherwise, why the Flash? Like if Superman's,
Superman's
faster,
main powers are flying and invulnerability.
Invulnerability. But I think that's another thing that I wish in the media, in the superhero landscape we have now, I wish people played less off of other superhero stuff and more off of the, like, just kind of internal logic. Like, I think, like, we've gotten in our brains that Wolverine heals instantaneously, and forgetting the fact that, like, let's say you broke Wolverine's arm and it took the whole day to heal, that's still faster than a normal human being. That's superhuman healing. Like, I think this way because I would love some movie to do Patch and Joe Fix It. I want to see it on the big screen. Gimme. And I think it'd be really funny to have like a bit where like Wolverine has to wear an eye patch for a while. And they're like, oh, I thought you could super heal. And he's like, how fast can you grow back an eye?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. So yeah, I might have to wear this eye patch for like a month, but my eye will come back. You know what I mean? Like
it's
healing.
It's always the thing where like in a movie that's hard to portray, right? Cause you have to, but like in a television show, that's something you could easily do.
Or
like,
comic.
You could have like an episode where like the character's hand doesn't happen.
But the movie, like to just have the bullet pop out of his forehead is like pretty impressive.
Yeah.
It's a cool, it is a super cool image, but then you just run into the problem of like, okay, to the point where like either he's getting old, so his powers don't work so well, or something else has happened, so his powers don't work so well.
I was going to say is that most, and this is, I'm going to blame this on executives, like the higher up executives.
I'll co-sign this, not knowing anything you're going to say.
Yeah. Well,
that feels like a safe person to blame. Yeah. Let's go with that. Yeah.
It's because, like, you know, it doesn't take a lot to come up with creative ways to get around Superman's powers or even Wolverine's powers, because again, the drama, the emotion is always going to come from how they feel about it, their heart.
Yeah.
You know, so that's how you create a conflict of their emotions. Like, that's why Pa Kent's death is so compelling, because it doesn't matter if Superman's the most powerful thing in the universe, he can't save a heart attack.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I think I would be blown away. I don't think that these writers aren't pitching that. I think it's executives being like, yeah, but I don't get it. Can he just punch him in the face?
Yeah.
Or can't the bullet just immediately pop out? And then you're like, yeah, but if we do that, it's going to create so many. It's very much like one of the greatest like plot faux pas, I think, of all time in movies. And I'm very glad that the next movie completely ignored it. But I also think it might be the moment that broke this franchise is the Star Trek Kelvin verse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At the end of the second movie in Star Trek in the Darkness, they cured death.
Yeah.
Because of how they literally explained that, like, hey, if we inject anybody with Khan's blood, they will be resurrected.
Yeah.
And then the next movie completely just ignores that beat. But you're just like, no. In the last movie, you literally brought somebody back from the dead with science.
So nobody can die in this universe anymore. There's no more drama.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just like, man, you should have just like found another way to bring back Kirk or just not killed him in the first place. But and I, there's just certain points with people. And I agree with that where you're where if you're super, if your Flash is so fucking fast, who the hell can you create to like even give him any trouble?
Yeah, because in this episode, you know, Captain Boomerang throws his boomerangs and then there, it's look for the show, for the show's budget.
Is it the same guy or is it a new guy?
No, it's just some dude. It's a different, completely different actor.
Completely? They didn't even bring the original guy back? No, damn.
It's just some dude. And he dodges the boomerangs and it looks cool, but it's like, you're the Flash. Can't you just run up and like knock him over? And then
well,
like,
also haven't we... we had a whole episode, and it's one of the best episodes of the series, actually, written by Sterling Gates, Inter-Flash Time, like the entire episode takes place within like 10 seconds.
Yes.
You know, it's like the bomb is blowing up.
Like seismically fast.
And I think obviously there's way people have been writing these stories for decades, you know what I mean? So there's ways to get around this stuff. I just think, you know, for Flash in particular, especially if you've got 9 seasons, 24 episodes a season, whatever, like right off the bat, you kind of need to figure out your rules. So you know what you're doing, like how, especially with, because I actually think Flash power wise is trickier to write than somebody like Superman, because at least Superman has kryptonite.
I agree. Yes. And with Superman, at least
people do get really lazy with kryptonite.
Yes.
They get really lazy with kryptonite. And but there's also like, you know, other people that can punch Superman just as hard as he can punch them. That kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know,
Barry doesn't really have a weakness like the way Clark, like with Clark Kent, it's like, you know, immediately, like it doesn't matter how powerful Superman is. If you drop an old lady off the building right next to him, he's going to go for the old lady and you can do whatever you want. Whereas with the Flash, for me, there's not like a strong thing like that. You're just like, well, yeah, well, Barry could just dominate or decimate literally anybody he faces.
Yeah. You could literally, depending on how powerful you make him, he could appear multiple places at once.
He can travel through flipping time, for God's sake. So we can always rewind and go back.
Well, anyways, that's what they're going to do this whole season. That's why Stephen Mill's back. That's my pet theory. And there you go.
And off that, I think they're also going to retroactively like, actually, Oliver's not dead anymore.
No, yay. That's 100%. He's going to run back in time and they're going to be like, oh, we got to have that ending and give it to everybody in Arrow. But also like he's back and it's okay.
Would you be shocked to learn that this first episode of their 9th and final season is a time loop episode? And apparently they haven't done a time loop episode on The Flash yet.
I would be shocked to learn that.
Yeah.
Because Star Trek Discovery did one in the first season. It's the best episode.
Well,
of the
every sci-fi show does a time loop episode.
They do but it's shocking that The Flash never got
it this long. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny, DJ,
you said this thing. I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you. I read this interview that said that like Eric Wallace, he's the showrunner, he had planned out season 9s and 10.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm shocked that they're ending at season 9. Just make it to 10.
Well, that's a CW.
I know. That's a big complicated thing.
That's Warner Brothers and whatever. And he said that the original idea was that he was going to basically make it a 2-season arc and that the end of season 9 was basically going to be a cliffhanger. And he was like, I was going to do the greatest hits. He was like, I was going to bring back the Legends. I was going to bring back Arrow. He was like, we were going to like wink back to the entire Arrowverse since we're basically closing it down. And then he was like, our final episode was going to be like our 200th episode. So we were going to do like this big celebratory, like big thing. And he said, when he only got 13 episodes, he was like, well, crap, I can't bring back everybody from the Arrowverse. I can only bring back people from the Flash. And he's like, the reason why Arrow and Diggle got past that is because he's like, there's so much in the first season that he's like, I feel like they're cast members, which I think is fair. But he made his plans for the 200th episode. He just moved it up. And he's like, that's the series finale now. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to look at that episode. And I might just watch that episode, even not knowing the last final season, just to watch it.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine. I
did that
fine.
With The Office too, but it'll be interesting to be like, okay, where do I think he was going for 2 years? And then does it work without having that 2-year buildup?
Yeah, it was an interesting watch because like part of the plot point is Barry has made a book. He's compiled all the information from like Gideon and the people they've interacted with of like a beat by beat of like, here's how the future's supposed to play out.
How the future is going to play out? Dear God.
But I think the thing is like, because and it's him obviously learning that, you know, that things happen. But it's like, yeah, this should be like a season 2 plot line. That's something that we should have. How did it take us 9 seasons to get? You
nine
have access
years,
to the future.
Barry. Yeah, how did, 9 years.
Like,
you took 9 years to be like, maybe I should see what happens next year in the in this future database that I have.
As of right now, I have committed myself to watching every episode of this final season. We'll
doing
see
Lord's work, DJ.
We'll see. We'll see how it works. We'll see how it plays out.
Speaking of things that are playing out right now, enough about The Flash and all its problems. Let's talk about a book that I know doesn't have any problems, a book that I think is engaging, and a book that I think has fucking rad art. Yeah, I can say that on the Patreon. I'm talking about DJ, tell them about your, because I gotta say, like, a lot of the patrons over here, they're big supporters of Super Best Friend. And I also know a couple of our patrons, I saw them tweet Hellbent. So yeah, I believe Mr. Jake Hefner, who I think is a patron of both of ours.
Yep.
Good fella came over there and supported your book. So tell our patrons about Hellbent, because I think they can sniff a good comic when they see it. And yours is a good comic.
Yeah, Hellbent is an irreverent supernatural thriller in the vein of like Sandman and Preacher and Something is Killing the Children. If you're into those type of books, you'll love Hellbent. If you missed the previous two volumes, we're reprinting them. You can get all three in one go. If you've been following us, thank you. And don't miss out on the finale. Jason, I've been getting, both your and my comics are wrapping up at the same time. I've been getting this question a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you feel wrapping it up? How does it feel?
You know, it's weird because I kind of wrapped it up like 6 months ago. It's only wrapping up publicly for everybody. So I went through all the feelings and stuff like that about, like, because I finished the script like in June of last year. So I had all those feelings back then. It was kind of sad. It was sad for me. It was kind of sad being like, this might be the last time I write Maddie Moore and Captain Terrific. Was it the same for you with Hellbent?
Right now, a little bit different because obviously the script was written a while ago, but, you know, it's still a minute of getting art pages and notes and all that stuff. So we're still in production. But for me right now, it's kind of like cathartic, like, because it's just a lot of work. It's just a lot of work to try and
get. And you probably also the same way, like, I know, like with me, you probably were like, oh man, like, there's a chance we may never get to issue three. Because I know you did this, I did this the same way where I was like, well, if issue one doesn't fund, then there's no issue two, and if issue two doesn't fund, there's no issue three.
Yep, 100%. We had an outline, we had a treatment for all six chapters, all three volumes.
Yeah, same.
Two chapters per volume, but yeah, and so and it's just cool to be like, okay, we get to do what we plan to do. We get to finish the story the way we wanted. That's great. And it just takes a lot of time and attention, and so it's kind of cool to be finishing the marathon. I think once it goes out to people, there will be kind of like a, oh, it's done now. But like right now it's like, oh good, we made it. Thank God. Oh my God.
I always say to people, and I say this especially to comic book fans, and this is the reason why, again, I think independent comic books are better than the big two, and they always will be, is because superhero comic books are always in the perpetual second act.
Yeah.
And the thing that makes us love a story is the ending.
Yeah.
The ending every time is what makes you be like, I love that. When Luke turns off the scanner and launches that torpedo blindly and the Death Star blows, that's what makes us love Star Wars. When Aragorn kneels to the hobbits at the Return of the King, that is the thing that makes us go like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
It's those moments. So the fact that you're getting to do that and you're getting to tell an ending, which is something that not many comic books get to do, and on your own terms, is what is going to make Hellbent the best thing ever. So give them the link where they can find this. I'm telling all the patrons, go over there and check it out. And there'll also be a link in the description.
HellbentComicBook.com.
Sweet. All right, everybody, go check that out. DJ, also go check out Only Stupid Answers. I think we can reveal this on the extra podcast. I know we're still working on some of the details, but I think we're going to have DJ and Roxy's review of Ant-Man and the Quantumania. Wait, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yes, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania.
Wasp is Infinity War, Quantum, is that
Quantum Man and Ant-Mania.
Kang and the Ant is the Wasp, Mania, Ant-Mania, is that it?
Yeah, you nailed it.
Okay, thank you. We're going to have a review of that movie, Ant-Man 3, by DJ's podcast in our feed. So be on the lookout for that, I believe.
Check it out. Is Ant-Man the most important Avenger?
No.
No.
Okay.
Ant-Man right. is the Avenger that you could most easily just edit out of any movie and nobody would notice.
But then nobody would have gotten out of Endgame.
I haven't seen this movie yet. Uh-huh. And I'm going to say this, and I feel kind of bad actually for Paul Rudd, that they were kind of like, all right, guys, we got to make a third Ant-Man movie. What the hell do we do?
Yeah.
Well, we have to introduce Kang somewhere. So how about we just have him take over the movie?
It's a bummer because I actually really like the first Ant-Man, but I think that might be some residual Edgar Wright energy. I know we're wrapping up, but I did want to ask you all. Do you think we're going to get like an actual Avengers team, or is Avengers just the catch-all for like MCU team up now? There's not like a quote-unquote official Avengers roster anymore.
We will get my believing is that we will get a quote-unquote new Avengers, but we're not going to get them until Kang Dynasty or after, because I think because they don't think we know these. I think we're doing basically phase one again.
Yeah.
And we're just going to basically position certain characters and be like, okay, he's going to be on the new Avengers. He's going to be the new Avengers. Falcon is going to maybe either Falcon or Carol is going to be the leader, but I don't think they're actually going to team up until whenever Kang is probably Kang Dynasty.
Yeah.
Gotcha. And I do think there's going to be two teams. I think one of them is going to be like the Dark Team or Thunderbolts, as we know it's now titled. And one is going to be, I think it should be called the Young Avengers, but they will probably call it the New Avengers.
Yeah, I agree. But I also mean, like, on top of that, like, we will get a team with Falcon Cap and Carol and Doctor Strange. And probably Spider-Man and, you know.
Yeah.
We will get, and Shang-Chi.
But I do think, DJ, you make an interesting point, because there are so many characters that, like, Avengers is just going to be the name for, like, the movie or, like, basically the crossover event where everybody shows up.
Yeah, I agree.
It's interesting how that stuff changes, because I feel like when I was a kid, at least, it's like the Avengers is a very static group of people, and the Justice League is whoever in the DC universe happens to be teaming up at this time. And it's funny how like now the Avengers is basically opposite. That. It's like Avengers is everybody.
Yeah, and now the Justice League is like very much like, no, the Justice League is Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. And then like it's so funny because for most of comic books, that's not who the Justice League are. Whereas, like, you're exactly right that they flip it. The Avengers were always, like, Cap, Iron Man, Thor, and a couple of the people.
Yep.
yes, you're right. But anyways, all good times. Thank you, DJ, for allowing us to keep you longer. If you are the DJ variant of Universe 6311, I wish you safe journeys back to your universe. That's where Kang's originally from.
Ooh. Do we know what universe we are? Did they give our universe a number?
616.
That's the one where Captain America's hanging out. Where's the one where none of the superheroes, all the superheroes are just comic books?
Well, that doesn't exist in Marvel.
Oh,
well. Because it's Stan Lee and Kevin Feige both believe, and they've said this, that the Marvel universe is the world outside your window. And I'm like, well, Iron Man doesn't fly past my window, but no, we're in their universe, we're technically 616. In DC, we're Earth 33. We're Earth 33.
Again, that's where Superboy Prime's from, right?
Bingo. Yeah, that's the world where like all of the DC universe exists in comic books.
Cool.
Yeah. So, but Marvel doesn't want to do that. So who the hell knows? And also, weren't there arguments where the actress who plays Miss Marvel was also like, no, Kevin, the MCU is not 616. It has to be something completely different.
Yes.
Yeah, because 616 is the comic book main universe. Yeah. And I think the comic book said the movie universe, they gave him a different number.
I think they gave him like 16323 or something like that. Yeah.
I applaud one, her dedication, and two, the moxie to go to like the boss of all bosses and be like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I also understand like his things where he's basically like, he's like, we're not going to make this like confusing. We're going to, you know.
Yeah.
It says, so in the Marvel comic book universe, Earth 199999 is the MCU.
Oh, I can see why Kevin didn't want to use that.
yeah. And apparently somebody else says that, like, apparently there was some other comic book that said it was 838, which I don't understand either.
It's almost like this is all bullshit we're making up.
It is bullshit. They should have just made it 507, because that is the month. Oh, 508. That is the month and the year that Iron Man 1 came out.
Missed opportunity. So you just say,
actually what it should be, just be Earth 1. That, just make it fucking simple. Just be like, Earth 1 is the MCU.
Earth 1. Yeah. Let's listen. Let's get Kevin on the line. See what he has to say.
Sure. So let's call him up. Anyways, we need to hang up. DJ.
Sorry. I'll call Kevin on my own time.
You call Kevin on your own time. We've had him on the show before. He's been fine. He was in our holiday special last year. He was a lovely man. He is an AI assistant, but he won't answer our calls. But I have been told that I have to put more quarters in the machine, DJ, and it's going to happen.
Gotcha. So we gotcha. Okay. Go get my quarters is what you're telling me.
That's right. Yeah. Call Kevin on your own time. That's what I'm saying. Cool. Anyways, DJ, thank you so much for talking to us for a very long time in this pop culture episode.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And everybody out there, thank you for supporting the Patreon. You're wonderful, sexy patrons. And because of you, we can do long interviews like this. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
And goodbye, super friends.
Bye.